Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, October 23rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Democrats line up to take on Republican Congressman Eric Paulson and Melvin Carter's run for St. Paul mayor. A task force seeking compromise on a disputed Fargo-Moorhead flood control project holds its first meeting today. Dan Gunderson reports.
The $2.2 billion Red River Diversion Project stalled after Minnesota rejected permits, saying the project shifted too much flooding to areas that had not flooded in the past. A federal judge issued an injunction halting work on the diversion, but encouraged a negotiated settlement. Governor Dayton and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum established a 16-member task force to develop recommendations for a project that will meet Minnesota permit requirements. The task force includes supporters and opponents of the current diversion project. The group must recommend solutions by December 15th. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
Public hearings on a proposed new rule on sulfate pollution and wild rice get underway in St. Paul today. Dan Crocker reports.
The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has proposed a new rule designed to protect wild rice from sulfate that's released from iron ore mines and other industry. It's a flexible rule that would calculate a unique standard for each wild rice lake. The rule faces criticism from all sides. Business and labor groups in northern Minnesota say it's based on flawed science and could shut down mines and impose huge costs on city wastewater plants. But tribes and environmental groups also oppose it. Paula McAbee with Water Legacy says it wouldn't do enough to protect wild rice.
That it would not only be expensive and take years to develop, but it wouldn't actually protect the abundance or the sustainability of wild rice.
The public comment period on the plan runs through November 22nd. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
It's been six decades since a Democrat won Minnesota's third congressional district seat, but that's not stopping DFLers from lining up to challenge five-term Republican incumbent Eric Paulson next year. Brian Baxt went to the western Minneapolis suburbs to find out more about the developing race.
John and Susan Prin have voted for Congressman Eric Paulson before. The Eden Prairie couple appreciated his work on policy related to pulmonary fibrosis. Their 42-year-old daughter, Emily, died this year after a long battle with the lung disease.
He fought for her health care. But I'm seeing a different Eric Paulson now, and that's really sad.
Susan Prin says Paulson has lost her support, partly because she doesn't think he separated himself enough from President Trump and his agenda. The same goes for John.
All this business of shaking hands with people across the aisle, that's just not there anymore.
We're shaking hands with people in his district.
Yeah, he's been invisible here in CD3.
Paulson declined an interview request. His office says he holds monthly teletown halls, dozens of constituent meetings, and other public events around the district. Still, growing dissatisfaction with Paulson brought the Prins recently to a Plymouth church to size up a potential challenger.
I will be preaching the gospel tonight, the gospel of campaign finance reform, so bear with me. Anyway, I am Dean Phillips, and I'm running to be your next congressman in the 3rd District.
Phillips spoke from the pulpit about curbing money in politics. It's his signature issue, including a personal pledge to refuse contributions from federal lobbyists and political action committees. The business executive is a newcomer to politics. Phillips has been busy sharing his ideas and life story. It has a tragic start because his father died in the Vietnam War when he was 6 months old. His fortunes changed when his mom remarried.
And I was brought into an extraordinary family of achievement and philanthropy and great principles and values. And I recognize that fine line between advantage and disadvantage.
In his campaign, Phillips is casting himself as a practical progressive. He supports tax cuts, but says any plan must be paid for and focused on the middle class. While he says he personally pays a $15 hourly wage at two coffee shops he co-owns, he doesn't think that minimum should be imposed on businesses. And he calls for universal health coverage, but stops short of endorsing an approach many Democrats have rallied behind.
I believe that the most pragmatic, likely way to achieve that is not to go to a single-payer system. I don't think that's achievable. What I do believe is achievable is the expansion of a public option.
Subtle but important differences have developed between Phillips and Adam Jennings, another Democrat contending for the nomination. Jennings says the federally mandated minimum wage should rise to $15 an hour. On health care, he backs a proposal from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders that would make the government the main provider of health coverage through a Medicare for All model.
And that's something that I want to debate. I want to be attacked on that because I think having a single-payer universal system is the right thing to do.
Like Phillips, Jennings has a business background. He also highlights past work on a Ford plant assembly line and service in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And he's on the Tonka Bay City Council, an elected post he's held for just 9 months. Jennings says he wouldn't be a candidate for Congress if not for President Trump's election.
I didn't think of this as a career move. I thought of it as a call.
The 3rd District has steadily become swing turf. It now boasts more DFL state legislators than Republicans, and has voted for the Democratic presidential nominee the last 3 elections. Meanwhile, Republican Eric Paulson has run up 5 comfortable congressional victories.
We don't have a problem getting Republicans to vote for Democrats in this district. We have a problem getting Democrats to vote for Democrats in this district.
Besides Jennings and Phillips, there are 2 other announced DFL candidates who haven't been as visible or don't have as much money behind their campaigns. They are consultant Jim Haugen and comedy writer Brian Santamaria. DFLers are set to endorse a candidate next spring. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News, Plymouth.
Residents of Minnesota's capital city will be voting for mayor in 2 weeks. 10 candidates are running for St. Paul mayor, and we're introducing you to some of the leading contenders this week, starting with former city council member Melvin Carter. Tim Nelson has the report.
Melvin Carter's family has been in St. Paul for 4 generations and played a role in one of the city's pivotal historical moments. His grandfather lost a half dozen commercial properties in the Rondo neighborhood when Interstate 94 was built through the heart of St. Paul's Black community. Melvin is the son of a St. Paul cop and a school teacher who's now a county commissioner. At 38, he's the youngest of the top contenders to succeed outgoing mayor Chris Coleman. Carter got his start in politics working on the Kerry Edwards presidential campaign and was later a staffer with a Summit University nonprofit. He beat a well-known incumbent for the Ward 1 city council seat in 2007 and worked on trying to make sure the Green Line light rail didn't disrupt the city like the interstate did. Carter resigned in 2013 to take a job with the Dayton administration. In his run for mayor, Carter is emphasizing racial and economic equity.
What I've learned so many times in my life is that the way we plow our streets, the way we fill our potholes and police in our communities, how long it takes us, God forbid somebody has to call the fire department, how long it takes us to respond, that those things are really critical to sending strong messages about whose democracy this is and who is a part, who counts and who matters in our community.
And Carter says he wants to build on St. Paul's recent growth without forgetting the city's long traditions.
What St. Paul needs is a mayor that understands community life. I'm somebody who grew up in Hockey St. Paul. I'm somebody who grew up in Winter Carnival St. Paul. I shouldn't say that because somebody may dig up the picture of me as King Frost the 47th in the junior royalty. I'm also somebody who grew up in Disparity St. Paul. In getting pulled over and knowing I wasn't speeding St. Paul. And these are 2 important things, I think, to bring together.
Carter would be the city's first black mayor if he's elected in November. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.